The chain around Maggie's ankle has left permanent marks, testament to countless failed escape attempts. From her attic prison, once a cherished crow's nest bedroom, she watches neighbors living ordinary lives through dusty shutters. Arthritic Elsie tends her roses, pregnant Louise collects mail, the paperboy makes his predictable rounds. These glimpses of normality only heighten her isolation. The house itself mirrors their fractured relationship. Kitchen and lounge on the ground floor, bedrooms on the first, and Maggie's attic space looming above like a tower in a dark fairy tale. Every Tuesday at precisely 6, Nina arrives with her ring of keys. She removes the shorter chain, only to replace it with a longer one, allowing Maggie the illusion of freedom to reach the dining room and bathroom. The clink of metal serves as background music to their stilted conversation. After dinner, the shorter chain returns, and Maggie retreats to her attic prison. "I've bleached your toilet bucket, and we'll see you in a couple of days," Nina announces with clinical detachment, leaving precisely portioned meals outside the door. A photograph of Maggie's husband, Alistair, watches from the wall, deliberately positioned just beyond her reach. Their marriage feels like a dream from 100 years ago. The books Nina provides, carefully selected biographies of historical captives with escape chapters strategically removed, mock her predicament. Like their protagonists, she has become a prisoner in what was once her sanctuary. At the Northampton Library, where she's worked for 18 years, Nina is a competent professional who knows every inch of thousands of books and hundreds of shelves. During breaks, she deflects personal questions by mentioning her mother, letting colleagues assume she cares for an aging parent. Nina methodically steals books, having perfected a system to bypass security by removing barcodes and hiding books inside larger volumes. "I don't like returning anything that enters my house," she explains. Her buried compassion occasionally surfaces, like leaving lunch for a homeless woman despite criticism. Nina simply responds, "I hate watching people suffer," ironic from someone who harms her mother. Nina manages early menopause through hormone therapy and maintains control through daily swims. Most telling is her hidden Lolita lip tattoo, a mark connecting to fragmented teenage memories that remain a jigsaw with too many missing pieces. Nina's life shattered at 14 when Maggie announced her father's departure. Her visceral reaction, declaring, "I hate you," and blaming her mother, transformed her from a well-adjusted teenager into a troubled young woman engaging in risky behaviors. The crisis deepened when Maggie discovered Nina's pregnancy at 15, but chose to handle it alone. After her husband left, Maggie balanced financial pressures while taking on more responsibilities at her medical practice and pursuing management goals. Complicating matters was Nina's relationship with John Hunter, a local musician in his 20s. When confronted about the inappropriate age gap, Hunter manipulated the situation, exploiting Nina's vulnerability about her absent father to maintain control. Family dynamics can shift dramatically, turning those who once provided safety into sources of pain. Nina and Maggie's story demonstrates how quickly love transforms when secrets accumulate. For 23 years, Nina believed her daughter Dylan had died minutes after birth from a genetic condition. She regularly visited what she thought was her daughter's grave, a secluded spot with colorful plants and a yellow rose bush, leaving flowers and marking birthdays with candles. The truth was shattering. Nina had delivered a healthy baby boy whom Maggie secretly arranged for adoption, falsely claiming Nina was mentally unstable. Maggie claims she acted to protect Nina after learning John Hunter was involved with another pregnant woman, but instead she framed Hunter for murder. The truth emerged when Dylan, now Bobby, found Nina on Facebook. Their connection became clear when his birth certificate listed Margaret Simmons as his mother. Nina discovered Maggie had been drugging her with stolen moxidogrel, causing memory loss and early menopause. Most horrifying, Nina found her father's belongings in the basement and, upon digging in the supposed baby's grave, discovered an adult rib cage. I'm standing over my father's body.
Nina exacted calculated revenge by drugging Maggie with the same expired medication her mother had used on her. She imprisoned Maggie in the basement during renovations, installing triple-glazed windows, shutters, and a steel joist with a ring for attaching chains from a fetish website. She methodically isolated Maggie, telling colleagues she had dementia, neighbors she was at her sister's, and her sister she was in a care home. I considered my options, leaving her, contacting police, even killing her, Nina admitted. I contemplated burying her beside my father, the man she murdered. But I'm not a killer. Instead, she chose a punishment making Maggie's needs almost within reach, but just beyond her grasp. This role reversal created a disturbing symmetry, with Nina justifying it as justice. Yet her revenge brought no satisfaction, and she began crushing Moxidogrel into Maggie's food, perpetuating the same cycle of control she had once suffered. At the core of this tragedy lies the relationship between memory and identity. Nina experiences significant memory gaps around traumatic events, what Maggie calls psychogenic fugue, a defense mechanism where trauma triggers loss of identity awareness. Nina's crucial repressed memory involves her father. Though she believed he abandoned them, the truth was darker. 15-year-old Nina killed him with a golf club after he left her bedroom. Maggie witnessed Nina deliver 3 brutal blows until Alistair stopped moving. Maggie protected Nina by hiding the body and creating an abandonment story. This pattern of violence, followed by amnesia, recurred when Nina attacked Sally Ann Mitchell and later Dylan after discovering Maggie's imprisonment. Maggie's medications maintained these memory gaps under the guise of treating post-stillbirth depression. Upon discovering these deceptions, Nina turned the same tactics against her mother while still experiencing dissociation. How much of ourselves exists in our memories? If Nina cannot remember her violent actions, is she truly responsible? Does Maggie's protective intent justify her deceptions? Both Nina and Maggie's monstrous actions stem from twisted love. Maggie believed she protected Nina by hiding her father's death, giving away her baby, and keeping her drugged, a maternal instinct warped by fear that stripped Nina of agency and truth. Nina's obsession with reclaiming her son came from profound loss. Meeting adult Dylan brought her unprecedented joy as she noticed their physical similarities. Her desire to be part of his life became all-consuming, leading to the tragic confrontation ending in his death. The novel demonstrates how love becomes destructive without boundaries and respect for autonomy. Maggie never allowed Nina to make her own choices, while Nina couldn't accept Dylan's relationship with his adoptive parents. The house serves as a powerful metaphor, once a grand family home transformed into a divided battleground. When Maggie sets fire to it, taking herself and unwittingly Dylan, she makes a final choice to end the cycle of generational wounds and unacknowledged truths.